Good evening, everyone, and Happy New Year. Welcome to the first meeting of the Clark County Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board, the date January 3rd, 2024. And we're going to call the meeting to order. Do we have any community input? I'm not seeing hands go up. But I saw, okay. So I'm not seeing any community input. And so we will go on with our agenda. First on the agenda, we have Dr. Michelle and Michael Cruz from Ashby Family Care here to give us a little bit of information. And then we can ask them some questions to follow up once they're finished. So welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Michelle Cruz, and I use the gender pronouns of she, her, and hers. And I have three small slides. Is it okay if I share those? Because otherwise I will talk forever.
Okay. We may need to make sure that you have the capability to do that. We're doing that right now.
Okay.
Well, there's a bit of an echo as well.
Tell us right now.
You can turn down the background volume.
It should be good for you to share, Dr. Cruz.
Okay, thank you.
And I heard somebody say there's a bit of an echo. Is there still an echo online?
No, it sounds great. Oh, okay, maybe we do.
It seems like there is a microphone that's on over here, maybe, or?
Did you have any community input before we moved off on PSA? We passed community input if you had any. You can get it at the end if you need anything.
Hang on a second. What?
Anything to share?
I'm going to power through so you all can move through the agenda. Well, again, good evening, everyone. I'm Michelle Cruz. I use the gender pronouns of she, her, and her. I am here with my wonderful teammates from Ashby Family Care. Excuse me, Ashby Family Need and Engagement Services. I have Liz Devenberg. She is one of our program coordinators, and she supports our work around applying to become a contractor to do community inclusion and supportive employment. I missed to hear Michael Cruz, who is our executive director, and he does about everything. He does navigation. He does everything. He's in the classroom. He does care. He does a whole lot of different things. Let's see. I don't see Bruce Jones or Cody Finley. Bruce Jones is our program coordinator, and he is also the individual who supports our BIRCH, and that's our Benefit Resource and Connection Hub. I'll tell you a little bit about that. And Cody Finley is our program coordinator for the Leader Mentorship Program. I have that on the ending slide, so I don't have to worry about remembering it. And I'll make sure that I get the slides out to you right after. So a little bit about Ashby Family Care, or now Ashby Family Lead and Engagement Services. We started off as a community-based organization that was, we provided compassionate and individualized support for individuals or adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And we provided them through the means of community engagement, respite, and peer support. As we did this work, we realized that our clients, our individuals needed more support if they wanted to be able to connect in the community in a safe way and to build relationships. So we transitioned our organization to a nonprofit, so that we can provide more holistic support for our clients. And so Ashby Family Lead and Engagement Services is our nonprofit. It is BIPOC led, and we still provide individualized care, educational, and social programs and services for adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities, for those who live in Clark and Cowles County. And truly our organization, because we are a BIPOC led organization, we truly, truly create our curriculum, our engagement opportunities, to be really inclusive and culturally responsive. We truly want our folks to feel included, respected, and supported and valued. Okay. Did it move to the next slide? Okay. No? Okay. I want to stop the share and read here.
Sorry.
How about now? Did it go to the next page? Okay. All right. So what we provide programming and also services and support. And right now we have a lead and mentorship program that we offer to adults with intellectual developmental disabilities. Our program coordinator is Cody Finley. And what we do, we receive some funding through the Dan Thompson Memorial Grant. It's about a year into our program right now. And what we do is we provide workshops that really focus on helping our clients to kind of learn in the classroom and practice the skill out in the community. And so we help to increase their awareness, access to and use of community resources. We focus on helping them if they're interested in going to college. We do some academic exploration by spending time at either PCC or WSUB. We focus a lot on health and wellness, and we call it mind, body, and movement. So we focus on just getting folks moving and physically active, and focus on a lot of food type things because we, in our culture, we do a whole lot of different things around food. The other slide, sorry, let me go back. We also have a partnership with Hapo Community Credit Union where we provide financial wellness. We do workshops, we do saving challenges, and we teach our folks how to budget, and then we practice the skill at the farmer's market, shopping, and all types of things. We do a whole lot of things in the outdoors, indoors, all around, and we really try to focus on being really inclusive and making sure that we're doing it in a culturally responsive way. What we're working towards right now is we're working to build out our employment exploration and preparation, really focusing on connecting our individuals to employment opportunities, and that is through a hopeful contract with Clark County Community Services, becoming one of the contractors to do supportive employment. So our folks are really excited about that. Currently, in this particular program, we employ the individuals as peers. Some of our individuals do have IDDs. They have employment. We do a whole lot of training, a whole lot of support, but they also support the participants that participate in the LEAD program, and a lot of them are doing extremely well. Today, we've employed and supported 9 mentors. We've had about 37 participants, so we kind of started slow with small cohorts. We've had 6 so far, and this January, we have 16 in the class, which is a lot. So we have a full cohort. So if you know anyone who would like to participate, our next cohorts are in March, May, and August. The next piece that we have a benefit resource and connection hub, and the program coordinator is Bruce Jones. He supports us with Mr. Cruz. They do a lot of benefit navigation. So we work with our caseworkers, or work with the client's caseworkers and the clients to actually kind of bring the resources a little closer and help to kind of be the advocate and supporting the client to get what they need. What we've done is we wanted to really make sure that we understood the needs of our individuals, particularly of those in the BIPOC community. So we partnered with Clark County Community Services, Evergreen High School. We do believe we had an individual or someone from Peace Northwest to come and help us to really understand what our BIPOC families need, so that we can actually kind of bring those resources a little closer to them. So we participated in one in October, learned a lot, and so we'll be doing another one in April. Some of the resources that we provide through the Birch is we do emergency grant funding. And some of the things that we have assisted clients with so far is kind of paying some of those acute bills, like acute emergencies, like they run out of money to pay for keep their internet on, utility bills, basic hygiene needs, people just need a shave or haircut. Emergency transportation we use quite a bit. Some proposed food waivers don't include transportation, so we help our clients to be able to kind of get back and forth by providing them with support around transportation. We also provide access to technology, particularly if they need in their adult family homes or their spaces to connect with their providers through telehealth or telecounseling. We have computers, we help them to use them to be able to connect that way. And also clients who are nonverbal, we have a communication device to help them to communicate. We also help to do a lot of I should say a lot. We help to connect many of our clients who are dual diagnosed to mental health services. So we work on that through building relationships with the clients, really understanding their needs and helping them to get connected with the supports they might need. And then finally, we provide community engagement scholarships for those individuals who don't receive Medicaid. So some of our individuals, they're not connected with services, but they still need support. And so we give them opportunities to be able to do some community engagement through like maybe First and Birth or through like trombone lessons or something like that. Okay, left slide, did it move? Did it move to left slide? Okay, this is my team right here. This is how you can reach us. So there's Michael's information, my information, Bruce, Liz, Cody. Our office location, we have two locations. One being where we actually hold the LEAD program, and that's 5123 Northeast 94th. We're in Suite A, so you can come and see us between the hours of 10 and 4 or just call to make an appointment. And then we have another location on 4th Plain. We're not there that much, but the Moldate location is where we actually are. Here's our nonprofit site and our phone number. And we have a pretty active Facebook page, so you can get an opportunity to see some of the things we do, some of our work in motion. So that is who we are and what we do. Anybody have any questions?
I do. This is Patty. I work for the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. We help people with disabilities to obtain and maintain employment, and we work closely with Hall County DD program. Is there an eligibility criteria to qualify for new service?
So we just ask that our individuals be over 18. Sometimes we'll take them 16 and 17 and just 10 if they're kind of transitioning from like high school or program. And we actually work with the caseworkers to look at their service plan. We kind of determine if we have a staff that can support the needs of the client. I would say that most individuals are eligible. We don't really work with truly high behavior individuals. We don't have the staffing for that just yet. We do know that there's a need there, but we typically, I mean, if they have a caseworker, sometimes if they don't have services, we'll see what we can do to try to provide some support for them.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions?
I have one if I can get my video to work. You mentioned that your organization engages higher education. You mentioned Clark and WSUB. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So one of the things we do is through our program, we do a couple of different things. We do what we call kind of learning assessments. We use a tool called BARC, and we try to understand try to demonstrate what the individual skills are. And then we kind of go from there and we try to figure out like if they're interested in going to college is one of their goals. Then we try to set up an opportunity to match what their skills are, what maybe an academic program might be, and and give them an opportunity to explore it. So in October, we went to Washington State University of Vancouver, and specifically that because they have a TRIO program, and that TRIO program provides support for low-income students, first-generation students, and individuals with disabilities. So it's really important that when we do our college exploration tours or campus tours, that we introduce them to disability support services, which would be at college. They have peer support or peer advisors there that can work with our clients one-on-one and help them to navigate through the campus, learn about programs. So we try to introduce them to supportive services if they're interested in academic exploration. So I know they have them at WSUB, Clark, and also at Portland Community College.
Okay, I see Amy has her hand up, too.
Sure.
Amy? She freeze.
I didn't mean to raise my hand. I was just trying to put the Facebook link in the chat.
It's back up again. Your hand is up again.
One of the things that our science did at WSUV, if I could just add a little piece. One of our mentors
I think
is really interested in becoming a diplomat in mathematics. And, there's not necessarily a career that she's identified, but we're really excited to see the math department, the whatever that cactus thing is, that big flower thing is. But she's actually interested in doing some tutoring, math tutoring. So, we'll go back again. She was really excited about going. She was interested, really excited about having some more mentees go. Mm-hmm. So then you kind of show them around campus. So it may take a couple more times to get there before there's an application, but there's a lot of interest.
Well, I work at WSU Vancouver. I'm a professor. Part of what I study is, how people working in juvenile justice either understand or fail to understand autism, particularly among people who don't necessarily present in a stereotypical way, whatever that means. But the math faculty over here are just top-notch, fabulous people. So I really look forward to your client returning to campus, and it's just a wonderful thing, and the TRIO program is awesome. So I was just really glad to hear that you know we're here and that you guys have had some good experiences.
Yeah, they had a great experience. Thank you for all you do. I'm in education too, so. Any other questions?
Okay. Anyone?
I have a question.
Okay. Go ahead.
You mentioned in this slide that you put down 2B7 for supportive employment.
Yes.
Can you share more about that? Are you planning to work closely with the BD program to become I don't call it CRD, community rehabilitation provider, or am I thinking totally off the track?
So technically, we should not be going supportive employment. However, we are an employer. And so we want to be able to offer our clients an opportunity to actually have employment. So that's a significant piece of being self-sufficient. So we're working towards becoming a contractor so that we can actually go through the DBA program to offer supportive employment to our clients. We understand the curriculum. We understand that space. The executive director has done a lot of work with job placement, particularly with dual diagnosed individuals and even justice involved individuals. And so we know the space. We just want to be able to be to be able to do it in that way. And I think at the same time, we will also be applying with DVR as well. And I believe those are a complement. Those two contracts have to go together. So TBD, we are building our capacity to do it, and we have the capacity. We just have to finish the application, which hopefully should be submitted in the next week.
All right. Gabriella is here in the room with us, and she has a question as well.
Hi, Dr. Curtis. It's Gabriela Mendoza. How are you doing?
How are you, Gabriela?
Good, thank you. Quick question. Do you accept individuals only with DDA, or do you accept individuals that don't qualify for DDA? Thank you.
So with the funding that we have right now, we will accept individuals without DDA. And so we offer those resources of community engagement. Through our benefit resource and connection hub. So we have some clients right now who don't, who are not on the DDA waiver, and they need services, so we don't want to turn them away. As long as we have resources, and that's what the generous funding from one of our foundations, we're able to do so. So if there's a need for emergency grants through like transportation, or if there is a desire to participate in swimming class or something, some sort of personal enrichment opportunity, we have a small pot of funding to be able to do so right now. So we can.
Thank you.
All right. So Ashby Family Care, thank you so much for what you're doing in our community, as well as taking the time to come and share with us this evening, and we look forward to working with you and seeing you more often.
I think that Tabby might have been making a comment right at the end of when they were talking about voc rehab, and I just want to make sure that connection is made, because Tabby's a good person to know at Voc Rehab, Dr. Cruz and Michael Cruz. She's a good contact to make. So I don't know if you had anything to add, Tabby.
I was actually just looking at your contact, and I was planning to email you.
I mean, come closer.
A little bit more.
Yeah.
And
maybe
it doesn't help that my
right idea is okay. I appreciate that. Yeah. We're still navigating our way around the community, and so any resources, connections, what happens to Happy to Connect. Thank you so much, everyone, for having us.
I will do an email so you all have each other's email information.
Great, thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, and you are welcome to stick around if you would like. And next on our agenda, we have Abby Malloy here talking about our community needs assessment.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for letting me be here. I just have a brief announcement. So for some background, Clark County Community Services is currently working on our community needs assessment, which focuses on the needs of people with a low income in Clark County. And the first and largest component of this project, which was a community survey of needs, has been completed. So we're now preparing for our community forum event, which provides an opportunity for the general community to provide feedback on the CNA survey results through comment boxes, as well as small group discussions. And the feedback that we collect at these events will be incorporated into the final community needs assessment report, and it will help determine and make decisions countywide. These events are open to everyone, and we're hoping to hear from a really broad range of perspectives from throughout the community, and especially communities that tend to be overrepresented and underserved in our social service network. So I'm hoping that you all can attend, as well as help us get the word out about these events by distributing the flyer through your network. If you have not already received the flyer, I will send it to Trish,
as you get it out. Yeah, we will add it to our meeting information. We send out an email after the meeting when we've got all the handouts and everything uploaded to our website. So we'll do that.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Trish. And before you get the flyer, just to give you information about the event, we're holding 3 in-person forums and 1 virtual forum all in January. The first event will be held at the Vancouver Community Library in the Columbia Room next Tuesday on January 9th, so less than a week. And we'll have an open house data walk from 12 to 5 where community members can come in, view the data on their own time, and provide feedback through anonymous comment boxes. And then there will also be a more formal forum from 5:30 to 7:30 where I'll be providing a presentation going over the data. Then we'll have longer discussions. The second event is at the Ridgefield Community Library on January 17th. It will have a similar structure. The third event is a virtual forum and is scheduled for January 23rd from 10 to noon. And then the last event is in person at the Camas Public Library on January 25th. And we'll also have a similar structure to the other in-person events. And light refreshments and appetizers will be provided during in-person forum events. All the buildings are wheelchair accessible, and any other interpretation services or accommodation will be available if requested at least 1 week prior to the event. So if you plan to attend and require any additional accommodations, please reach out to me as soon as possible. And registration is all through SurveyMonkey. There are QR codes on the flyers. We have registration available in English, Spanish, Russian, Ukrainian, and Chukchese, and those forms can be accessed by scanning the QR code on the flyer of the corresponding language. Thank you for sharing that flyer. You will all receive this after the meeting. And feel free to contact me if you have any questions or would like to request accommodation, and I'll put my contact information in the chat. Are there any questions at this time?
Gabriella here in the room has a question.
Sorry, I have a lot of questions. Hi, Abby. I didn't hear, do you offer childcare or no?
We are not able to offer childcare at these events, but children are welcome to attend. It's just at the library, so events are open to all.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Abby?
Oh, God.
Thank you so much, Abby. And hopefully you'll see some faces at your events. All right. Okay. Our next agenda item is Trish is going to give you a little update about legislative meetings.
Thanks, Susan. I just wanted to put a plug in. The advisory board at the November public meeting finalized your legislative agenda, and we are in the process of scheduling with our elected officials. We had our first meeting with Senator Rivers today, and I really appreciate all of the participation that we have this year. Y'all have been turning out for these meetings and signing up, and I just really appreciate it. I think that, you know, Darla can attest to the days of showing up in Olympia and using the blue card campaigns. And I think numbers matter. DD would do these blue cards that people would write their notes to their legislators, and the legislators would literally count how many blue cards they got. And that matters. So numbers definitely matter. So when we get a meeting with a legislator and it has, you know, five or six of us on the call, I think that matters, and that's really important. I also really appreciate y'all's just dedication to that and willingness to share your personal experience. I think that really has an impact on our legislators. You know, I can provide all the data in the world, and I think that having that paired with the personal experience that y'all can bring to these meetings can be really impactful. So thank you. Trudy's been contacting you. I really appreciate y'all for signing up for these. We don't have all of the legislators scheduled yet, so we're doing the best that we can to get them scheduled. Sometimes that's just dependent on the legislators. I mean, well, it's always dependent on the legislators' schedule themselves. So we do our best to get on their schedules and let you know as soon as possible. So thank you. And I know there is a number of us that are here tonight: Gabriella, Bob, Susan, Sydney, Tavi, Amy, that were at the meeting today. I don't know if y'all had anything else that you wanted to add.
Questions?
Yeah. Okay, just for the record, I want to say that everybody's doing looking at me because I'm the one that's so I just want to say that this is Gabriela, because you probably can't see me, it's too little. I think today's meeting was very productive. Hopefully Senator Rivers will listen to our concerns in the true vote, according to what we share with her. So, thank you.
Yeah. And shout out to Amy, too. She took her lunch. She met with us during her lunch break at school today. So, on top of everything else she had going on, she made time.
You have some of the hand phrase in there.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
Rachel and John, or Rachel. Is that Rachel Wasser?
It looks like we have a number.
Okay. Who's hand?
Rachel and Josh Wasser.
Oh, yeah. Rachel and Josh?
My husband's name on here. He's not in here. So it's Rachel Wasser.
Okay.
I know the legislative meetings that are coming. Is there anybody that's focusing, is focusing on the healthcare with disabilities? I mean, I'm a nurse, and so I feel like it was a little, I'd have a little bit more input in that area with legislators that might be willing to listen to what's happening in healthcare with disabled.
Got to answer that. Healthcare specifically is not on our legislative agenda. Definitely it's a priority. We come at it through different ways. Our three kind of general topics for our legislative agenda this year were employment, housing and then our aging population and having a continuum of services available, which what we spoke to, how Clark County especially is underserved compared to King and Spokane County. We're kind of seen as a connected to Portland more, so we don't get as many resources directed this way. But I know that that is a topic that we've talked about, you know, quite often, the need for available healthcare down here so you don't have to go to Olympia or Tacoma to get services. Gabriella has more to add.
Can you turn your mic on? Hi,
Rachel. It's great to see you.
We're getting echoes again.
A quick question. Do you know of a bill that we need to advocate for? So when we talk to our representatives, we can bring it up to them?
I haven't looked recently yet, but I will. And if there's anything that looks like it's on the docket, I'll email you about it.
That's great. Thank you.
I do just want to add that the advisory board has identified, you know, healthcare in the past as a priority. And one of the things that came up recently, the Governor's Committee on Disability and Employment was here in Clark County. And one of the things that came up at that forum was the need for access to healthcare for people with disabilities and their families. As a result, myself and Darla from Peace Northwest, as well as one of our nurses from Public Health, we actually got a meeting with the healthcare authority. They clarified some things for us, you know, namely that they know about that, you know, one of the things that we were concerned about is the lack of access for and reimbursement for dental care for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And, you know, they said that's a known issue. We are working on raising the rates. You know, they kind of seemed aware of some of the things that we were sharing with them. We are, you know, in the process, we're going to be, you know, circling back with them with any additional questions. So if you had specific concerns or questions that you would like us to address, then please, you know, let us know, what your experience has been. That would be really helpful.
Sure. I mean, that's a great topic to bring up. My brother's wheelchair bound and trying to get him to the dentist. I think I called 17 different dental places that said that they were on the list.
Wow.
And no one was taking new Medicaid patients. And the one that was going to take patients said that they were only allowed to come in if they were able to self-transfer from their wheelchair. I have heard that multiple times from different dentist offices. So I feel like that is something that is not addressed very well at all. You know, it's not the patient's fault that they can't self-transfer. That shouldn't, you know, preclude them from getting health care. Especially, like, for my brother, a lot of the new electric wheelchairs, they lay back just like a dental chair would. So they just have to adjust the room a little bit to serve the patient better. But that has been my experience over and over again. We finally found a great place, but he also has double coverage now. So I think that's why. But I think that's a great thing to bring up.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So Rachel, who did you find as a provider, if may I ask?
Seven Creek Family Dentistry. The gal that works for the state that does like the home dental care, she'll come to the house and do home cleanings for disabled people, is also one of the technicians there at Salmon Creek Family Dentistry. They're wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you, that's great information.
Okay. Thank you for bringing that up. It definitely is an important topic. I know I've read things even, you know, in architecture and design, when they're designing dentist office and buildings and furnishing them, having, you know, an exam table is not a one size fits all. And so if you're going to go in and get some medical care and expect it to get on an exam table, it might not happen. And so it needs to go up the chain a little bit further into when you're, you know, building a facility to provide care for individuals, like you mentioned, with the dentist. Okay, any other thoughts on that topic? Are we ready to move on. I'm not seeing any hands. Okay. And so our last agenda item for the evening is our legislative update. And is Hattie with us? Or Darla, is it going to be you?
It's me. And I'm going to try not to cough through it, so excuse my voice. So our legislative session starts on Monday. And so, you know, the new year always brings the new session. And this is going to be a whirlwind session. It's 60 days. So we're done by early March this year, which is just, you blink your eyes and it's over. The first advocacy day is going to be on January the 10th. All the advocacy days are going to be virtually, so anybody can join from anywhere. That being said, Peace Northwest is going up every week. It will not be on a Wednesday, though. We're going up every week to meet with legislators and to take people. So, Rachel, if you wanted to go up and meet with your legislators and talk to them about those critical issues, we would love to take you up, help set up appointments, and help whatever we can do to facilitate that conversation. That would be great. Advocacy Day will be happening every Wednesday. On January the 17th, the DDC is going to have a legislative kickoff. The best I can tell, this is replacing what used to be the legislative reception that they did every year. And so this is actually going to be in person, and it's very limited space. Sorry, I was just trying to pull up the flyer on that real quick. And of course, I'm not going to, oh, there it is. It's actually going to be held at the Uptown Grill this year, which I thought was really interesting. And it doesn't say anything about legislators being there. Gabriella, are they inviting the legislators from the different districts?
So at this point, we are still waiting to hear what's going to happen.
Okay. So anyway, that's what's going on. We've got several bills that have already dropped.
When is that kickoff?
January 17th.
At what time?
From 4 to 5:30.
Okay.
And in person only.
Okay, great.
No online off.
Okay.
But like I said, the flyer doesn't say anything about legislators being there. It's about coming together and networking with other advocates around the state. So the bills are dropping left and right. They got news today that the day habilitation bill dropped this morning. And this is a bill that they're trying to, okay, I'm going to show my age here. Back in the day when I was young, we used to, you can have employment and day services. And then at one point in time, about the time that we transitioned to a work first state, all of the day programs went to ALSA, Aging and Disability Services, the Division of Aging and Developmental Disability Services. And so you had to choose whether you wanted to go through aging and get your day services program, or whether you wanted to go through DDA and get your employment program. You couldn't access both. We changed that this last year, and so now there's funding for both programs through developmental disabilities, but you don't necessarily have access to day habilitation options. And so that there's a bill that's dropped that's focusing on that. There's a bill, the REACH bill. That's the residential excise tax bill, and that would take a percentage of each cell of a large professional building, and that would go, that percentage of that cell would then go toward housing, specifically for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. If we could get this bill through, it would solve our housing crisis for individuals with IDD. So we're very motivated about that, but there's a lot of people that are against it as well. OSPI has put in a request for a pay increase for paraprofessionals to what they're calling a living wage. And so obviously we want to do that. As many of you are aware, we try to get paraprofessionals or even bus drivers, anybody in to fill those spots is just really challenging right now. There's such a shortage of employees. So the self-advocates have brought back again the Nothing About Us Without Us. And this would, as staff, this would be a bill that establishes best practice for inclusion of people with developmental disabilities to be on boards, commissions, work groups, or anywhere else conversations are being held about them. And it provides a way to help create equality within our system. And then the other thing is that, and this is on the DD advisory board list as well, is that there currently is a delay when a child goes into ESET between, goes into the birth to three program, between that birth to three program and the providers. So the providers really have to absorb that first month of services. And so there's a bill that's been dropped already that's going to address that issue and really try to come up with that, the way to bridge that for the providers. Obviously, session hasn't even started. We're going to have a lot of bills during the short sessions. It's really focused on budget. As many of you may know, the governor's budget came out. It actually came out early. I think it was, well, I don't have the date written down, but it was like mid-December. I want to say like the 14th, which is early for the governor's budget. In that, there wasn't a lot that the governor had put forward. He did put forward to lower the caseload for DDA case managers. And so that was good. I'm sorry, I'm trying to remember this off the top of my head. I should have gone back and looked at it. He put in to address, oh, there were three things. He put $400,000 in to go to parent-provider groups, such as parent-to-parent, and the Informing Families Building Trust group. And then the other one, I think, was to help with pay equity with some of the providers. But not all the providers. And that's off the top of my head. I'm not 100% sure of that. I do have a list here with the link in it so that you guys will get the governor's budget directly if you haven't already gotten it. The legislative notebook meeting happens that first Monday in December. That is where all the advocates from around the state come together. They put forth all of their white papers that they're going to be providing to the legislator and educate one another on what their issues are. Those are on board now at the Arc of Washington State, and you can go to the Arc of Washington State, click on their advocacy tab, and then go down to 2024 legislative notebook, and you'll see all the issues. That's also an excellent place to get data and reports and all other kinds of things like that if you're looking for resources for the legislators. We will be going up weekly. We will be renting cars and driving people up. We would love to take you with us. And it's going to be a fun, fast session. Advocacy Day, the last Advocacy Day is February the 28th. So the first is January 10th and the last is February the 28th, and it's every Wednesday in between. So, any questions?
Thank you for the update, Darla. Does anybody have any questions?
I will forward this report out to Trish so she can give it out to all of you as well.
Okay, and so if there are no further questions, and we have completed our agenda, and so thank you. Our meeting is adjourned, and you are free to resume your evening. Thank you so much for your participation. Bye.
Great to see you all. Thank you.